your source for Big Ten talk. It's Off Tackle Empire.
Welcome to Off Tackle Empire, the renewed and reinstated and scheduled for kickoff podcast about all things Big Ten. Nebraska or no, that is what we're doing.
Oh, Nebraska's very much involved. Everything is normal. Nothing to see here. Nothing to be concerned about. Doesn't it, when they, I don't remember if they actually sent somebody out to, no, it was Kevin Warren announced that the season was being reinstated, right? Wasn't there a little bit of a Baghdad Bob approach to that, where it's, everything is fine, nothing to see here, since the season is going to now continue according to this revised plan. So, again, it's been a couple weeks here. The announcement that the season was going to go forward with this adjusted 8-game schedule came out about a week ago. I wanted to let it sit for a minute. And
you mean you wanted for Barry Alvarez to remember where he put the schedule?
Well, right. There was that too, which, and that's one example of many that we're going to talk about in the first issue, the first aspect of Big Ten's return to play that we're going to address here, which is how did we get to that decision? And boy, you could write a couple of textbooks for, I don't know if there are PR courses that you take. I mean, I know there's human resources. I've never heard of public relations. I mean, I guess you call it a communications major or something.
Essentially. But look, supported the reasons that the Big Ten canceled, and we don't think for a second that there's a political conspiracy involved in canceling the season or any of that shit. And we believe fully that the coronavirus is a real problem and that it can absolutely affect athletes. I mean, we know about, what's the Red Sox pitcher? He's done for the season.
Eduardo Rodriguez,
yeah. However, make no mistake, there was some really weird ways that the Big Ten did not do a good job of controlling the narrative.
They handled this so badly. And we were talking about before that I don't understand how, with the stakes being as high as they are, the Big Ten could have handled this from a PR perspective so badly. Either they don't have a PR firm dedicated on retainer for these situations, or they picked a really shitty one. I don't know which would be the worst option, but really, like, over the last few years, you've had various member institutions deal with utter calamity. The Larry Nassar issue, the ongoing Robert Anderson issue at Michigan, the issue with Kirk Ferentz and his strength coach being a closet racist. I mean, like, there's been one thing after another, scandal at this institution, scandal at that institution. Have the members not by now come to understand the value of having an appropriate PR response to whatever you do? Or is it still this ivory tower thing where they are so arrogant that they think our decisions are going to speak for themselves? There's no need for us to explain beyond that. And because we're invincible, which is true, there's no need for us to descend to the level of the rabble and give them frequent explanations or even information about what's going on.
It absolutely is a lot of that. And we'll get to, the Big Ten's attitude and some uncomfortable truths later. But now I want to introduce our Tribe Rooster of the Week, which is Matahari Bohemian Absinthe. It's a Tuesday night. Much like playing college football in a pandemic. I don't know if this is a particularly good idea for me to be doing this. Probably there's a lot of risk. Part of me's gonna enjoy it. Part of me's gonna realize this is not really entirely okay.
No, and my reaction is gonna be what it has been watching college football, which is, yes, I'm going to be here and observe, but I am also going to have something of a degree of horror in the back of my mind the whole time. So that's where we're coming from. We hope that you have something similar in your hand on whatever night, afternoon, or morning. Why not? It is that
I don't
partaking.
Bluff.
No, he's got it's a healthy dollop that you've got over there. So
let's revisit. Rapid reaction is I think that although the rapid testing that they cited as a major reason was probably a factor that allowed them to establish a credible testing regime and say, no, we really are taking this seriously, I don't think that's the main reason that
Before we get to that, though, let's kind of back it up a step.
Let's revisit the timeline of events.
A lot of stuff happened, and because of the way time is working in 2020, it feels like this whole saga started in about 1981. So we're going to go back, try to walk through this, through the most salient points, just, again, to keep track of how it is that we got. You recall that as we went through the summer, there was not much communication from the conference on whether we were going to play or not. Those of us who wanted to see football, I should say those of you, took that silence as a good thing. Like, all right, the closer we get to this, they're going to go for it, right? And we started expressing the opinion over and over again, like, look, even if they're going to try to play, we got to do something with the schedule here, because right now the only information we have is the old 12-game schedule with non-conference shaped holes in it, which for some teams meant not playing for the first 3 weeks of the season. For others meant playing 2 games and then 2 weeks off. For others meant 1 game and then 3 weeks off. There had to be some kind of adjustment to the schedule, and we didn't hear anything. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Is this delay with releasing a schedule mean that they're just thinking about putting it off altogether? Nobody knew anything. And that was the first sign that the Big Ten was not going to handle this well, is that they didn't say anything anything.
Because it got into August, which was the month that Big Ten games were supposed to start. Not conference games, mind you. Yeah. But also, actually, yeah, conference game. Indiana at Wisconsin was supposed to be the 31st of August. So now we're in the month that the season is supposed to start, and still nothing. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Big Ten drops a new schedule. Now this has the effect of not only, you know, getting people used to what to expect, but also mainly of confirming that, yes, we're doing this. We are playing Big Ten football. And not only are we going to play Big Ten football, we might be the first football game. Ohio State at Illinois was going to be the first FBS college football game of the season.
We're going to play. We're going to be the first power conference to do it.
We will lead, and it will be legendary.
And we've designed the schedule in such a way they were so proud of themselves. They told us the name of the scheduling matrix, basically of the Excel spreadsheet they use to put this thing together. Jenga 41. We're so proud. They made it sound like they invented a new isotope, which would be very like them, right? So they come out with this schedule that purportedly has collapsibility built into it, so that if they need to postpone, they can do it and it won't completely derail the season. All that comes out, and this led to, cautious excitement maybe on our parts, but excitement. Yeah, right?
Because you trust... A lot of the Big Ten states were states that were doing well with COVID. Michigan in particular, Illinois had been doing well, Ohio had been doing passably, New Jersey had, of course, struggled early on, but at that point was doing well.
Yeah.
So you had this optimism that, not only will they do it, but the fact that they put out a schedule and said that we're going ahead, and then that we have this collapsibility built in case of delays, led you to think, in light of, you know, a lot of the things that people like Dabo said about, oh, well, maybe we should get...
We should have COVID parties and get everybody sick ahead of time.
That whole thing. You know, you didn't hear any of that stuff going on. So I personally felt like, cautious optimism, but I guess. And then...
Then I'll tell you what happened next, what I think actually precipitated the Big Ten canceling. The Ivy League can't. Because who makes the actual final decision on whether we played or not? The presidents and chancellors of the Big Ten University. What do most of those presidents and chancellors like to think of themselves as? Public Ivies. We're every bit as good as those fuckers who don't give scholarships and have the $40 billion endowments. That's going to be us one day, damn it. So I think that was the clinching factor in the president's decision not to play.
Or a private Midwestern Ivy-ish.
Right. But again, the point stands. Yes. Every bit with them as it does with anyone else. So in my mind, there's no doubt that was the clinching factor in the president's decision not to play.
But there was a cascade of events that precipitated it. There were some games canceled, you know, many weeks out. And then you had North Carolina send their students home.
Yeah, and Michigan State then went fully remote.
You had North Carolina send their students home like just a little bit after all of the tuition and room and board was due.
Oh, plenty of them did. MSU did that too. A number of schools did that. I hope they get their brain suit out over that, by the way.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so that happened. And then, again, the schedule is released on August 11th. The following week, we get the cancellation notice. The thunderclouds gathered very quickly. Rumors starting spreading like a day or two before they made the announcement that the Big Ten is looking at canceling fall sports.
Also heard the same thing about the Pac-12. The MAC actually had canceled that Saturday.
The MAC did it. I don't remember the exact sequence, but the Mountain West canceled.
Well, Division 2,
Division FCS. Division 3. I don't think NAIA is playing either. But large swaths of collegiate football fell in quick succession.
Does the Bible not say that COVID is a hoax?
It's probably in one of them Old Testament books that I only read when I want to come up with a rule to impose on people here 6,000 years later. So you get the cancellation announcement, and it became apparent right away that the presidents and chancellors assumed they had their soldiers in line, and they didn't. Especially their athletic directors and their head coaches. And you could tell in some cases, you knew who the ones were that were not in line because they started chirping almost immediately. Frank, Day, Frost, all opened their mouths within the first day or two and said, "We just want to know why. We just want an explanation to tell to our players."
And the thing is, like, on one hand, they're full of shit. The reason is there's this virus. But on the other hand, what that suggested to me and what they did, in fact, say that I think is credible is that the coaches received no additional guidance or communication.
Yeah.
And the presidents didn't feel that they owed the athletic directors or the coaches any further guidance. I mean,
which is insane and strange because we all remember the line that the former Ohio State president Gordon Gee said when people were asking him if he was going to fire Tressel. He said, "Well, I hope he doesn't fire me." And obviously, he's been gone from Ohio State for a while, but that sentiment has to be understood by every president, every high up administrator at a football institution, which is that, yeah, your football coach doesn't technically have their hands on any levers of power, but you better believe they control whether you're going to be in that seat for that long or not. They at least have a voice in it. So,
well, across the Midwest, the state college football coach is the highest paid public employee.
Except for the occasion when there is a basketball coach who's higher paid, but that's pretty rare. It was a massive oversight on the part of the chancellors and presidents to not make sure that they at least told their coaches what was going on. I bet there were probably a handful of instances when they just didn't tell the coach anything. And how you don't do that when selling this decision to your constituents, which is your students, your alumni, and your boosters, is going to be difficult even with the coach on your side. And if the coach is actively pulling against you and sowing the seeds of dissent, leading parent revolutions themselves, I know Ryan Day stirred that up, by the way, but there's no doubt in my mind. Had to have been motivated by it because they came together in a hurry.
All 25 of them.
It was still bizarre to me. So what I found particularly funny about the whole parent revolt thing was that, first of all, those offices were empty. The Big Ten had furloughed all their staff. There was nobody there. But what I really found truly interesting about that is that those parents and most of the people I would think who were supporting them, thinking, "Yeah, give them hell," are these not the same people who chastise millennials and Zoomers as snowflakes, coddled participation trophy, ruined by all these things? And yet, what do we have here if not the epitome of helicopter parent? These guys are all in college. Why are you speaking for them? Why are the parents of college players a constituency that had any input here at all? I don't know. The mainstream media had no problem giving every single one of those dummies a microphone, though. So anyway, that whole thing happens. Silence from Kevin Warren. And Kevin Warren's role in this, I think, is something that's much commented upon. Because on the one hand, you have people who don't like the Big Ten's decision, who have a face they can put on it. This is the guy we yell at. This is the guy we have to convince.
And how is it that he didn't force his son to quit football?
Yeah, that's another thing, which is, again, his son's an adult and he plays in a conference operated by different people. So what do you want him to do? call Mike Leach and tell him, "I want you to hold my son off the field"? Like, I don't know. That was always a weird thing to me. But anyway, it gets quickly pointed out by a lot of very smart, "Oh, you don't understand anything" people, that actually Warren's taking his marching orders from the presidents and chancellors. Okay, well, fair enough.
He's playing the Roger Goodell role.
Sure, and he is.
Everybody hate me so that nobody knows who's actually making the decision.
And he is. But it again became clear that despite having, I mean, again, remember, the NCAA tournament was killed. The rest of, the NBA started canceling its games in March, 6 months ago. And so we had all this time to figure out what you're going to do, what you're going to say in which situations. I mean, really, it's not like you're talking about a decision tree with 64 or 128 possible outcomes. You're either going to play football, postpone football, or cancel football. You have three possibilities. And it seemed as though they didn't know what they were going to do until they did it. And had not planned.
They've done all three of them.
Yeah.
They've done all three.
And it seemed like they didn't plan for any of them. So what I'm wondering is, what were you doing in the meantime?
I feel like a lot of people were just playing it cool, hoping that
it would go away.
Well, you had to hope it would go away, because if you had any hope that our federal government was going to handle this in any less...
That should have been dispelled by Easter.
Yeah, that should have been gone.
Absolutely.
That should have been baked into the stock price, so to speak.
Yeah.
But there was always the hope that it was going to go away, because... Well, you remember that graph from the NCAA's... It was either the NCAA or a conference... in the NCAA, showing coronavirus cases, where we are now, and then where we thought we would be right now.
Those graphs always... It's a special, like a cognitive dissonance note, like the loudest, flattest, like, blang in my mind whenever I see that kind of thing. Like, we could be sitting in stadiums. Like, Europe is almost back to that point. Asia is almost back to that point. We're nowhere close.
We both went in big time buying shares of Detroit City FC, which was forced to hold a public stock offering after they lost like 90% of their revenue.
Did you get the email asking if you wanted to be an accredited investor?
No.
I did. So apparently the amount of money, you check your email. If you can prove to them that you meet a certain income threshold, which neither of us do, there's a second round of buy-in they're doing now, apparently, which concerned me a little bit, but whatever, you got to raise.
I would have definitely shorted City ahead of their lost Stars if I had any idea what was really going on with the
consistent with 2020. So anyhow,
it's just one of the things that's been frustrating is, of course, it's 2020 America. Conspiracy theories are about everything and they're all over the place. However, they wouldn't have gained anywhere near as much steam had there not been internal dissent. Had there not been coaches and... I mean, the players is one thing. You see the players react to things all the time. But the coaches coming up and saying, we don't know what's going on. The athletic director saying, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, Sandy Barber at Penn State saying, I don't know if there was a vote. That's a helpful thing to say.
Suddenly these conspiracy theories start to gain steam among otherwise reasonable people in lack of an explanation of what's going on, which is why...
That's why conspiracy theories are popular as they are, by the way, especially in these uncertain times, because when there are things beyond your control... that seem to be beyond anyone's control going on, you look for an explanation beyond the fact that the universe is a chaotic, sometimes cruel place. Because that's not very reassuring. No, what you want is the thought that somebody is in control and that somebody is to blame. That there is somebody who, if only I could kick in their door and fight them myself, I could change these things about existence that I don't like. That's why people cling to conspiracy theories. Because the alternative is much more disheartening. That no, nobody is actually out to get you. Sometimes things just don't line up in your favor.
Of course, the reason that they've become so much more commonplace in the U.S. lately is because people do not want to accept that the simple explanation is stop shocking levels of greed and incompetence by everybody that has power in this country. But anyway, that's where, in my opinion, the Big Ten failed. I will not sit here and say that they should never have bought into the Corona hype and that, oh man, Corona bros will never recover from this. However, we thought that they made the right decision, but they obviously had to know, given the amount of revenue they were losing anyway. I mean, it was a huge sacrifice that they made, on paper.
Well, and you know, the other thing, despite the announcement that Big Ten football is now back on, I heard something the other day on the radio that MSU's president estimates they will come out, they will break even now with the football season.
Because there's no public ticket sales.
But what I mean is, like, they will not have a loss despite the fact that there are no public ticket sales. That, for one thing, tells me two things. First is, you sure as hell don't need to charge hundreds of dollars per person per ticket to still make money. And what's going to happen to all the sports that schools took this excuse to axe? I haven't seen a single announcement about any of those being reinstated now that the football money is rolling back in. No. This is just another example of how, in the business that is college sports, everything is just a line item. These schools have been looking for years for excuses to wipe out a few of those little red lines, things like swimming and diving, cross country, and they found the excuse to do it. And even though the big, you know, the large positive black item is now back on the ledger, they ain't going back and undoing the lines they put through those red items. They're leaving those out. This is an excuse to get rid of dead weight, and they took it. And it's disgusting, by the way, because again, those non-revenue sports put hundreds of kids through college who otherwise would not be able to go.
Yeah, there's an awful lot that's really gross about all this when you look at the surface. One of the things that I found a little bit heartening was I saw a report that Ohio State was going to lose $60 million in football ticket revenue this year. By comparison, Illinois was only losing about $16 million. So,
so
we played the
up.
Long game. We were prepared for 2020.
All you were doing in being terrible for like the last decade was basically 30 years eating a weird preparation for hibernation, like. You weren't gaining mass, so that it was like drinking a lot of antifreeze or something instead. Like, this will make us immune to the cold that's coming. And sure, yeah, at the time it made you weak and sick all the time, but now that the cold is here, actually you are slightly better off having drank several hundred gallons of antifreeze over the last several years. Playing chess while everyone else is playing football. So,
speaking of gross things, we now have to wrestle with this. We've been forced into this situation, and I know the Big Ten ball conferences doesn't want to have this discussion. Are we now at a point where we have no choice but to admit that college football has nothing to do with college anymore?
Well, of course, but two things. One, we've been at that point for as long as I can remember, and two, why are the schools going to say that? They're not going to say that.
Of course they're not going to say that, but there's now.
So,
like,
of course
the veneer has all been the veneer has been stripped off now.
No, and that,
and the Big Ten was forced to strip that veneer off because there's still a lot of campuses where it's pretty much all distance learning, but
I don't know if this is the case now, but Ingham County was under a quarantine order because of how bad things got at Michigan State with COVID. So, yeah, the fact that you're still now planning on going forward with football.
Practicing.
And, the thought occurred to me at the time, like, I still think that the Ivy League thing was the biggest thing, but were they not also thinking in the backs of their heads, if we go down the road of we will take any steps we need to protect our student athletes, are you not now throwing a fresh coat of paint on the crumbling shed of student athlete amateurism?
Yeah.
I think you might have been. And so I think that consideration was probably there too. Why exactly they reversed course on that, I don't know. Now, we know the reason they gave, which is when they made the decision to cancel, daily testing was really not available. You would have a couple day turnaround, and then over the course of the next month, companies are able to come up with these things, and now partnerships are available that allow you to test and get results the same day so that you can be confident before you play that, yes, even as of this morning, we don't have any cases. So
it's fun that football drove the free market economy to create that solution while life and death didn't.
No, well, it's kind of like, you know, if you were to task the free market with making a mass-producible powdered orange drink, it would come up with all kinds of terrible variants. But if instead of trying to do that, you say, let's send people into space, oh, we need to find some way to feed them, then, brother, then you've got Tang. That's basically what we did here. We were so determined to do the dumb, pointless thing of playing football that we came up with COVID Tang in the form of daily testing. Because the only way to do that, to do the dumb, pointless thing, was to do this other secondary thing that actually has a lot of benefits. So, yeah, by pursuing the stars, by sending people into space, by playing football in the face of a raging pandemic, we have now both Tang and daily testing.
Yep, and that's...
Good luck reacting to that. That was the dumbest tangent I've ever gone on, I think.
Well, when you consider that the initial quarantine and lockdown was basically led by the NBA. I mean, the NBA was the first.
Yeah.
The NBA raised the flag on coronavirus. Okay.
How many lives did the NBA save by canceling their games when they did? I wonder.
I mean,
tens of thousands, probably, but we'll never know for
you
sure.
You gotta wonder: had the NBA not canceled the season,
would other people have just gone forward too?
Yeah. how many people would be dead? Because you know damn well that it wasn't until sports were canceled that the government was like, okay, we should probably say something about this. This is, people are wondering why they're...
No, as the president himself has said, I was determined to play it down. So, all right, anyway, what's Pitt... Well, that's how we kind of got where we are. There's so much to unpack here. Here's another thing.
With the guidelines, will this happen? Because the guidelines have been stringent.
You're skipping ahead and we're not there yet.
Okay.
Before we get to that, we're going to talk about... So obviously in the wake of... Well, a few beforehand, but mostly in the wake of the Big Ten's announcement that they were not playing, a number of players said, all right, well, I'm out. I'm going to prepare for the draft. Because at the time, the thought was, well... There were plans going around about playing some kind of season in the spring, starting in like January or starting in March. And regardless of when it started, if any kind of college football season had started after the new year, those players were going to be at a huge disadvantage for preparing for the NFL draft. That was absolutely true. So it was very understandable that we saw a whole bunch of stars and some lesser, some not quite so stars, players opt out. Some of those guys now have decided they want to opt back in, but there are NCAA hurdles now because a lot of them hired agents. So we'll run through, we're not going to go through every single name on every team, but again, we're talking about like a lot of the conference's highest powered, you know, big time guys who looked into opting out or ultimately did. Some of those guys are back in now. So we'll run through a few teams that I know had multiple guys. There are some teams that I don't think had anybody opt out. The easiest one is Minnesota, where Rashad Bateman, I think, might have been the first guy who said he was opting out.
Yeah.
If not, then he was one of the first couple. He has indicated he wants to return the school. As of earlier today, they are still determining how they can get him cleared.
Actually, the very first Big Ten player I remember opting out was Illinois' Ravon Bonner, who is almost certainly not going to be playing again because he opted out not for his NFL draft stock, but because of asthma. And
yeah,
I empathize with him. I also have asthma. And even though the CDC came out and said that actually, no, they totally didn't mean to say that coronavirus can be spread aerially, or at least not in America. It's like that in every other country, but not in America. Even though they clarified that it's not actually aerosolized, I still can't afford to take that chance. And so I totally empathize with Bonner, and I'm surprised that there are not more asthmatics, given that there are a lot more asthmatics than you think that play sports at a high level. I'm not one of them, but...
Sure. But so to go back to Bateman then, I mean, obviously the thing is, not only does he hire an agent, but it's apparently understood that he accepted what would be impermissible benefits if he was still a collegiate player. In
terms of pizza?
Yeah, transportation, housing, stuff like that agents very often forward guys before they get drafted when they don't have any money, because these things cost money. And being a collegiate player, they haven't been able to make any for 3 years or 4 years. So the NCAA has to give him approval to play. Normally in these situations, at the very least, they have to pay back what was received. Maybe that's possible. I mean, I can't imagine a situation in which the NCAA really decides that now is the time to stick to the... But, you know, they haven't given blanket waivers for transfer eligibility.
Well, I mean, you also remember the NCAA came... The NCAA didn't come down that hard on Baylor for the rape thing, but they came down on that one running back and they were like, hey, you're not allowed to not be homeless. These people aren't allowed to give you a place to sleep at night. That's impermissible.
Yeah, so although we would think that Bateman and anybody else whose issue with getting reinstated is because of taking benefits from an agent after declaring, very understandably thinking there would not be a normal season or anything approaching a normal season, just put a pin in that, because boy, the NCAA, there's really nothing that's beyond the pale for the NCAA, is there? So Bateman is the big name there. Rondale Moore, Purdue, a big-time dynamic player, also opted out. Has not said anything yet one way or another. I looked and I didn't find anything indicating that there's been any change in his status. He's obviously a big-time talent, but you have to remember, his tape really is his freshman season and a couple games of his sophomore year. He was injured most of his sophomore season. If he doesn't play at all, he's a great athlete, but our team's really going to be well. I mean, he's got first-round pick kind of talent. but are teams really going to take, are going to make that kind of investment on a guy who is really quite an unknown? I mean, the evidence that he understands the entire route tree, for example, is a little scanty on the film. That's all we're saying. So he's very much up in the air.
And that's one of those things where it's like, you know, you can be a great college player that will still struggle to adapt to the NFL, even if you have all the physical talents. That's not to say that he shouldn't go get his money if he's got the opportunity.
You know who he most reminds me of is Tavon Austin. What are you going to do there? Elsewhere in the West, Northwestern's Rayshon Slater indicated that he was opting out of his senior season.
The most mysterious first-round projection that I can remember.
I guess there's some projection involved there, but he has been a solid starter for 3 years. And
well, I mean, his arm length is apparently sufficient.
Yeah, and honestly, that's what counts a lot of the time, but I haven't seen anything indicating he has changed his status. You know, again, there's still a month before we play. There's plenty of time for him to change his mind. But given that he was projected in a lot of places as a mid-first-round pick, maybe he considers staying out. Let me see. I don't believe anybody from Nebraska or Iowa.
Nobody from Nebraska would dare.
Right. So I don't think anybody from Nebraska or Iowa or Wisconsin opted out that I remember hearing about. I could be overlooking things again. It's a little hard to keep track of 14 teams sometimes.
Especially since all of that stuff happened, oh man, nearly 2 months ago. Over a month ago.
About a month ago. Yeah, some of that. I mean, most of the articles I'm seeing about Slater are from August 20th, 22nd, 26th, that kind of time frame. So looking elsewhere, Penn State had a couple of very high-profile guys opt out. Pat Freiermuth, the tight end, has announced he is back in. I don't see anything in what I've read up indicating that he's going to have NCAA issues, so maybe he didn't hire an agent or anything yet. Freiermuth at least intends to be back in. And then I see an article. Here's the headline. Penn State is having a, and this is in single quotes, healthy dialogue with Micah Parsons about potentially opting back into the 2020 season. So I'm going to go first, and then I want you to tell me what you think a healthy dialogue looks like in this situation. For me, you can just Photoshop James Franklin's head onto John Cusack from Say Anything, and he is now standing outside Parsons' apartment house, wherever, every night, with the boombox over his head, basically just playing crowd noise from Beaver Stadium. That's what I picture. What do you see in a healthy dialogue between James Franklin and Micah Parsons right now?
Call me a cynic, but I think it might be about as healthy as the dialogues Jim Boeheim has with players that want to leave early.
Cool. So look, Parsons has not announced anything about changing his status yet. I glanced at a CBS Sports mock draft earlier today, and they had him projected as going number 2 overall. He is an incredible talent. There's no question about it. Boy, that's way up there, especially considering there's going to be 3 quarterbacks again that you could see going in the top 5, top 10. So,
well, when does Penn State play Ohio State? Because if that's early. Okay, yeah, that's early. So I could probably see if they lose that game, Micah Parsons, he's come down with a little bit of a bruise. I don't know, forehead tendon.
Got a bruised earlobe.
Yeah, he's out for the season.
My point is nothing has really changed with Parsons' status. He's still out for the time being. Obviously, if Penn State gets him back, that transforms the nature of that game with Ohio State. Elsewhere, we'll talk Michigan State. They had a handful of guys opt out. Most notable of those is defensive end Jacob Panasuk. He has now declared his intention to opt back in. Reserve linebacker Marcel Lewis also opted out. He is back in as well. 2 other guys, Jordan Reed, who has started for three years at right tackle, said he was opting out. He has not said anything. And Justin Stevens, another reserve lineman, opted out as well. He has not said anything either. He most likely was going to redshirt. Up the road in Ann Arbor, a couple of interesting developments here in that you had some guys opt out, and then a couple more guys made their decisions after the Big Ten announced they were playing. So the earlier opt-outs, they had Ambry Thomas, cornerback, senior cornerstone of their defense this year. He opted out. He has not said anything, so he is still out. Jalen Mayfield, the only returner from last year's offensive line, opted out. Apparently, he was, according to ESPN, he was like Kuiper's number four offensive tackle. I'm gobstopped by that. He was pretty good last year as a redshirt freshman, but man, number four offense, I don't know about that. But anyway, he has now declared that he's opting back in. That is a huge gain for the Wolverines. Now they only have to replace four starting offensive linemen. Nico Collins, however, had not said anything previously about opting out, but now he has declared that he is entering the draft and hiring an agent.
Yeah, that kind of seems irreversible. Not like that it's not possible, but that it won't happen.
The timing, yeah.
The timing suggests that that one...
It suggests that his camp, he and his camp, whoever he's talking to about his decisions, looked at this schedule and the way the season is set up and said, now we're out. Which is weird.
They still didn't take Ohio State off the damn thing.
Hmm?
They still didn't take Ohio State off the damn schedule. Nope. Not playing.
Hard pass. Elsewhere for Michigan, Christian
Turner... I won't do it, so quit asking.
Christian Turner, reserve running back, opted out. He did not update his status yet. And then another thing that does not seem to be COVID-related at all is that Dylan McCaffrey opted out basically last week and is going to transfer. And then basically right around that time came the news that Michigan has declared Joe Milton as their starting quarterback. So that's not COVID-related in the slightest. It's a guy losing a job and going elsewhere.
So the question is, does Illinois go with... I mean, is Isaiah Williams developed enough in 2021 to warrant the starting job, or do they go with McCaffrey, who I think may have just... may have just more touch at this point than Williams as a passer.
You could make worse decisions than trying to get a former five-star. I mean,
absolutely.
The guy certainly doesn't lack physical ability. The way they used him continues to be mystifying to me. Elsewhere, we would be remiss not to discuss Ohio State. They had two high-profile presumed first-round opt-outs in cornerback Sean Wade and offensive guard Wyatt Davis. Both of them have opted back in, but they both have the same obstacles that Rashad Bateman does in terms of, well, we have to get declared eligible again before we can play. I'm racking my brain here and trying to think if I heard anything else, if I've omitted anybody. I probably have. I almost certainly have. But look, I mean, consider the list of names and almost not the team really, because you'd be missing a lot of pieces, but the names of the potential first round draft picks in the Big Ten this year, really the only guy who didn't opt out was Justin Field. I don't think there's another guy who was viewed that highly that was intending to ride this wave out and see what happened with a spring season or something.
Man, there isn't a first-round projected meme quarterback this year. You know, like a Tanner Lee or a Clayton Thorson or Mitch Leidner.
Not that I recall seeing, no. In fact, I think there were only three quarterbacks. Like, the thing I looked at today had Lawrence and Fields and then Trey Lance, the guy from North Dakota State. But other than that, I don't think there were any other quarterbacks on that list.
Well, anyway.
So now we'll look at the schedule itself and see what we think about that.
Ohio State.
Well, sure. In terms of winning the conference, yes, I don't think that projection has changed. I will note that at least in the East Division, Halloween could potentially be lit because now you have Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State, Penn State on the same day. I was looking over the West Division side to see if there were reciprocal, interesting games, and not so much. Wisconsin, Nebraska could be kind of funny for a very different reason. And as we alluded to this earlier, but it also kind of came out today that basically Barry Alvarez and Jim Phillips were in charge of putting together the new football season. Like, it sounds as though there was a reference made, I don't remember exactly by who, that Barry Alvarez basically did this schedule. So when you look at here, remember, where did Barry Alvarez go to school, by the way?
Wisconsin.
No, he went to Nebraska.
Oh, that's right.
And that apparently has not lit the slightest ember of sympathy in his heart, because Nebraska, let's look at that schedule. First game in the horseshoe. Second game, hosting Wisconsin. After that, you have to play Northwestern, which is like fighting a bag of hammers.
Nobody,
and then you get Penn State.
Nobody wanted to play football more than Nebraska.
Do you still want to play?
Exactly. They wanted to play football the most. They're going to play the most football. You're going to smoke that entire
carton. You're
going to
smoke
carton.
The whole carton. Yeah, that's how this is going. Man, that is so hilariously brutal. First 4 weeks of the season, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Northwestern, which is not as difficult, but still no fun, and then Penn State. And then from there, I mean, shit, it's still like Illinois and Purdue are probably their easiest games, their two division matchups. But I don't know, like, DCUA Nebraska wins more than two games on this schedule.
I mean, that's rough. The fight for last place in the West is going to be interesting, and it's probably going to depend a lot on, If COVID goes away tomorrow, then yeah, it's probably going to depend a lot on which of those teams jockeying for last gets hurt. But that leads me to something interesting, and the only thing about the year 2020 that I, besides the dog that we adopted and the dog that you adopted, that I hope continues for years to come, and that is the championship week bonus game.
Yes, sir.
Every single team is playing on championship weekend.
I can't wait to see, again, probably Nebraska, claim a championship title for winning their 6-versus-6 game.
Yeah, well, how often have we gotten to the end of the season and desperately wanted to see the two worst teams go at it, but they couldn't because they were in opposite divisions?
Every season. We want that every season. Yeah. But that's because we're mean and spiteful.
Well, look,
that.
Though, last week... Okay, everybody on Twitter decided to be like, oh, Thursday night, it's Browns and Bengals. Yeah, I was going to go watch that game, but it's Browns and Bengals. And I'm like, I want to watch that game.
Are it you was entertaining.
It was extremely fun.
Yeah.
It was two terrible teams that hate each other.
Yeah, the game, look, the worst games are not games between bad teams. They're games between a good team and a bad team. Because it's over quickly. The difference in them is obvious. All the flaws of the bad team are obvious.
Well, the Cardinals and the Seahawks were pretty good when they had that 6-6 tie.
Yeah.
You want to watch some more of that? You want to watch some more LSU 9, Alabama 6?
No.
Is that what you want?
Hell no. Give me LSU McNeese. That's what I want to see. I want to see some fireworks. I want to see something cool. And that's what this could be. So I didn't tell you about this beforehand, but all right. Give me, first of all, your projection based on this schedule. Who's the conference championship game?
Ohio State versus Wisconsin.
Okay. What's the number two game?
Penn State versus, I guess Minnesota. They have a favorable enough schedule.
Okay. Number three? Michigan, Iowa, probably?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it had to be Michigan, Iowa.
What about number four?
Number four. Indiana. That's. You know what will be interesting? I don't think, right... A lot of Illinois fans are pretty high on their chances right now because 2020 was supposed to be good, but it's weird now. It would be interesting if we got to play Indiana because I wanted to play Indiana. I wanted to see a real benchmark of what we could do against another historically feudal program that's actually done good things. Instead, we just get to confirm that we're less good than Ohio State. However, I think number four in the West is a little more likely to be someone else, but I guess I don't know. The last four in the West could be anyone.
Yeah, I actually kind of think that's true with the bottom three in the East as well.
Screw it. I'm feeling...
You must make a call. Who is it?
All right.
Who's number four?
All right, Indiana, Illinois.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Number five?
Number five, let's say Purdue.
Purdue and...
Versus Michigan State.
I agree, and honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if MSU crawls their way up to number four. The more I think about it, they...
Not so much for anything good MSU does, but because Indiana is sadness.
True, and also, again, it's total speculation about what MSU is going to look like in their first year, but they actually have more experience coming back than I initially reckoned. Now, not a ton of star power among that experience, and they lose experience at some very key places. But I certainly think I would still give them a decided edge over Maryland and Rutgers. So, number six game then. You have Maryland and Rutgers on one side, Nebraska and Northwestern on the other. You're sliding Northwestern down to number six again.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to regret that. I know. You know what?
Almost certainly.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and put Northwestern at number four. Northwestern, Indiana is the 4-4 game.
Okay.
Because last year I thought Northwestern was going to be decent, and it turned out to be fun until the last game of the season. So,
and are you moving Illinois to five, or are you kicking them all the way down?
Well, if we can't beat them in November, then, oh my God, December Northwestern will destroy us. December 19th Northwestern? Instead of ruining my weekend after Thanksgiving, now they'll ruin Christmas. My entire week of Christmas. So, yeah. I guess slide Illinois to the sixth slot, and let's put Purdue in that 5 spot.
That means we get Nebraska in a matchup with their perpetual blood rival, Rutgers, for the 7-7 spot, huh?
Hey, Illinois might be able to tie the series with Maryland if they can win that one at 1-1.
You know, I keep thinking that eventually one of these coaches in the West, whether it be Brom or Frost or Lovey, has to break through into the upper crust, but it's entirely possible that PJ just took the space that there was, and now that basement, and then filled the basement with concrete.
I still think that it's most likely to happen for Brom because he's been recruiting at or above the level that Scott Frost Nebraska is. Lovie Smith, even if we were to do that recruiting thing, even if we were to discount that, well, we had a whole bunch of departures that weren't really COVID related. Leading up to this, actually the biggest one was Trayshawn Smith, who was a transfer that was definitely from Louisville that was definitely going to start for us at safety. Now we have to move Tony Adams back to safety, we just learned today. I guess somebody flipped him in August for completely non-COVID related reasons. What a bizarre time to lose a player to another school in August of 2020. Somebody flipped this guy. Like, what the hell are we doing? So, and then of course we also lost Ricky Smalling and our sixth offensive lineman. So, yeah, in my opinion, the best part about 2020 is that the eligibility doesn't count. So we can maybe have the 2021 season that was supposed to be our 2020.
That's going to be interesting. Well, I wonder how many guys are going to want to stay. How many schools are suddenly going to find themselves with 100 scholarship players and basically try to crean an entire senior class? It's going to be so weird. How are we going to have any idea? Well, there's obviously going to have to be some kind of deadline for people to decide if they're staying or not. But before that time comes, how are we ever going to be able to project next season?
What is the solution that most helps Ohio State's pursuit of a national title? Because that is what the Big Ten will adopt.
The solution that most helps them would be probably to kick all the seniors out, because Ohio State hardly ever has seniors.
All right.
All the guys who play leave for the draft. So
there it is then. That's what they're going to do.
No post-senior eligibility.
They're going to go back on that frozen eligibility thing, basically, is what's going to happen. And Illinois will have nothing to show for the 4 years that they spent building up to 2020. Hell yeah.
Duh.
Love when that happens. But how likely do we think it is that all these games get played? Because we did have fairly stringent protocols that were announced, including a 21-day suspension for anyone that tests positive for COVID. 21-day suspension. That means after missing two games, right, you get them back in time to get two practices in for another game.
Sure. And so that's a chaotic thing for an individual player, but of course...
No, I'm sorry, three games.
But of course, the other thing is there are these team and population positivity rates. Data provided by these chief infection officers, the Big Ten's point person at each campus, will directly inform whether practice and competition are allowed to continue, and that's based on a 7-day rolling average. Here are the rates, by the way. Team positivity rate, there's a green, orange, and red level. Red is 5% or above. Think about that in the context of an average college football team, which is usually somewhere between 100 and 120 players.
That's like 8 dudes.
At the most, if you have a large roster, that's 8 or 9 guys getting COVID in the span of a week, puts you in the red range. And although this press release is not completely clear about that, it seems to suggest that if you're over 5%, you can't play. And it's not clear for how long, but because the Big Ten canceled for a month and then allowed another month before they reset the schedule, what was the schedule built around, really? I'll put it this way. What's the last day of the schedule? December 19th. What happens the next day?
College football playoff.
Yeah. So
this was always about getting Ohio State in the college football playoff?
Yeah. And what happens if Ohio State misses two games because their COVID rate's too high? If they only play 6 games, they're not going to make the college football playoff. Are they? Or are they? There are still so many unknowns.
Of course, the amazing thing is that it's such a, you know, it's literally 1 year. Is Ohio State going to suck shit next year?
Yeah, well, they haven't been recruiting very well recently, so obviously the bottom's going to fall out when these guys leave.
If everybody loses a year of eligibility, are they going to suck shit next year? Are they going to go undefeated in the Big Ten and non-conference and then not and then get snubbed from the college football playoff because the Big Ten didn't send anybody last year? Is that really what's going to happen? Okay, the Pac-12 isn't a Power 5 conference, went from a thing ESPN thought to official domestic policy of the United States recently. So the Big Ten doesn't have to worry about that.
No, because we still have swing states here. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just, man, this brings us full circle to what we said at the beginning, which is, we have football on the schedule. There's ostensibly, theoretically, a way that they can do this kind of safely. It's hard not to be excited, not to be eager, not to be enthusiastic. But there's so much about this that doesn't make any sense. There's so much about this that could have been done better, that could have been done smarter, and they just didn't do it. And so because of it, it still feels like all of this is in jeopardy, and it didn't have to be. We could have done this so much better.
Yeah, so how exactly are you feeling about this season? How do you view this season? Because for me, it just seems like a series of like exhibition games, like a Maui Invitational, but with even fewer fans.
Kind of, yeah. Although, is it the Maui Invitational? No, it's the Battle for Atlantis. It's going to be played in like North Carolina now, isn't
it? No, North Dakota.
Oh, shit, is it? Damn, I read that really wrong. Yeah. How do I feel about this season? This season is, and it's hard not to fall into the internet trouble, 2020, man, and all the shitty memes that have spawned from that. But honestly, it is tinted in the same way everything else in 2020 is. 2020 is always going to be the year I had to postpone my wedding. 2020 is always going to be the year I basically floated in the void professionally for 6 months because everything with my job is so weird and slowed down now. 2020 is going to be the year that I got a dog who is a complete sweetheart who smashes me in the nuts with her paws almost every day. There's nothing is entirely good or bad in this year. Well, I take that back. Plenty of things are entirely bad. Nothing about this year is normal. I mean, really, like, what's the closest analog to this? This is going to be a season that's talked about the same way people talk about, like, the World War II seasons, except that we're in the modern age with it. Like, even if World War II hadn't happened, they still weren't throwing the ball and black guys couldn't play. Like, that was still a completely different, non-valid era of football. Who cares about it? This is going to be, I can't imagine how many books are going to be written about this season. And some of them might actually be readable, unlike the typical football books.
And the other thing is, for me, like, what I was so excited, what I get excited about every year is, man, you know, even when I'm watching the games, I mean, I just get excited about the usually 1 to 2, sometimes 3 games that I get to go to every year. I get excited to go back to campus, be in the stands, and yell my head off for my hapless team until midway through the first quarter when they're down by several scores. But now I don't have that. I'm not going to get to do homecoming. I don't know if there's going to be marching bands. There's not going to be.
I can't imagine. They're blowing air. I don't think
you
so.
You know?
I can't imagine.
The college game day is not going to have people there. So, you know, if all I cared about with college football was just watching the quality of the product on the field,
you'd be satisfied by the NFL if that was the case. So
I wouldn't be a fucking Illinois fan, that's for goddamn sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's another thing that you get into with this, which is that this return of college football is for the professional fan, the fan of the professional college team. It's not for people like you and me. Because, again, to us, we want our teams to win, but if they lose, it doesn't mean that the experience wasn't worth it. You know, it doesn't mean...
I cried when we got bowl eligible last year. This season is not for me.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. The Big Ten is back! Big Ten football is back! Is it really? Is it really?
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!